You're listening to KSCU, your underground sound. Finishing up there with a couple underground nuggets for you there. The Talk is the name of that band. Fools for Fashion, going back to 1983 for that. And also a band called The Mood with a single from 1981. Two true underground nuggets for you on the 80s Underground Show. And that's a good segue to my next guest who, if all goes well, should be on the air. Bill, are you there? I can hear you. Excellent. Okay. Well, it is the 80s Underground, and pleased to welcome musician and author Bill C. down in Southern California. He was a member of the late 80s band Divine Weeks. He has just authored a new book called 33 Days, chronicling life on the road as an 80s underground band. And it's out now, and he's out talking about it, promoting it, and it's good to have you on the show. Welcome, Bill. And so you got this new book. And is it officially out yet, or? Right. Oh, thank you. Yeah, you tracked me down, and I was more than obliged to talk to you because it sounds like a fascinating story. So I'm a little remiss to admit that I don't have any of your band's stuff in our record library. I actually looked before the show started, and it went I think something straight into the Divinals, and I didn't have any Divine Weeks. So I'm gonna my first homework assignment is to track down some of your music. But give us a little context, a little history. You know, of what you were doing in the late 80s. You were a member of this band, obviously. How long were you around, and, you know, what sort of accomplishments did you have in that realm?
Steve Wynn's Down There label, originally. You know, they put up their own first EP, and then, you know, Green on Red, Naked Prey, True West, Top mm-hmm. Jimmy, you know, these bands. And, you know, Steve, you know, just I was a fan of his, and I, you know, just would go to his shows, and, you know, I'm not one of these real, I mean, I never fit in L.A., you know, like I was never one of these, you know, scenesters, and, you know, self-promoting was never good for me. But, you know, he always kept asking me, you know, about the band, let me hear something. So I finally said, okay, well, why not? And I gave it to him, and, you know, and he asked, you know, if we had any songs, you know, to record, and it was all very informal. You know, imagine, like, you know, a label run by artists, imagine. Yeah. You know, and so it was a good experience, and the book, 33 Days, that's chronicles our first tour on the first record we put out with his label.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Through and Through, and it came out in May of 87, and we hit the road and, you know, did the full, in a van and did the one gig one night, you know, 33 days, and, you know, just looking for floors to sleep on.
Right. And so basically 33 days on the road, was it all across the U.S.?
Yeah, and
playing shows?
Into Canada, and, you know, along the way, you know, some, you know, we played with, you know, very young Flaming Lips in Kansas City, you know, if you ever came across the Dharma Bums up in
yep.
Oregon, real good band, I thought was really underrated. They're in there, and, you know, just...
I would think that would be a very fruitful time to go out and, you know, cross paths with some of these bands that are obviously more well-known now. You know, we're just getting started around that time.
Absolutely.
You know, like the Flaming Lips. I mean, a lot of people don't even know the Flaming Lips started in the mid-80s, and, you know...
Right.
So that's pretty cool, and I came across some clips on YouTube. I think there's one interview where you guys are just talking on the streets in St. Louis about your tour, yeah. And, it, you know, it's... You know, it's cool, and you know, a unique little snippet of history.
That was a real bonus to find that, because that was like a real good night, you know, in St. Louis, and, you know, we were in front of this place called Euclid Records, which I'm thrilled to say is actually still in business and still fighting the good fight, and, you know, all indie, you know, no big label stuff, and the guy who runs it there, you know, I talked to him sort of leading up to putting the book together, and. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll make it out there and do an appearance there, too. It's just it's good to meet folks like that again, see if they're still doing it.
Mm-hmm. So what prompted you to write the book? Was it any one thing, or just you had all these stories and you just had to get it out? Or
Well, I mean, the reason why I think anybody really does it is because it hurts too much not to.
Right.
You know, so after a while, it just keeps crawling up your backside, and you can't ignore it anymore. And, you know, it's like a lot of people in the self-published world now, you know, think that they have a story to tell, and I think it's great that the opportunity's there. But for me, I really was like, I don't want to do just a band memoir, you know, played a gig, got drunk, passed out, you know, repeat and rinse. You know, I didn't want to do a book like that. And, you know, it's really kind of a little bit more like a coming-of-age story. You know, the whole 80s underground scene is in the book. It's part of the fabric of the book. But at the same time, it's these guys, you know, I can sort of speak sort of outside of it. It's these guys I'm looking in and, you know, they're kind of just like having their minds blown out there, and they just so happen to play music at the end of every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it's really kind of an on-the-road, you know, growing-up story, you know, just, you know, because we were out there kind of feeling like we were over our skis most of the time. But at the same time, I mean, that's the way to see the country, you know. It's
right.
Like, it's, you know, take the myths away from it, go out and see it at the most, you know, ground-level, you know, position.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's... You know, there's a lot of sub-stories involved in just going out on the road, like you said, you know, putting it in context of the overall scene and this the state of popular music, the state of popular culture, the state of the, you know, the country at that time. You know, it probably paints an interesting picture.
And I think history shows us that the more conservative and unimaginative, you know, the mainstream, the more inventive and vibrant the underground scene is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we saw, just like the pioneers did, you know, the Black Flags and Hootskooters, we saw the same thing they did, but, you know, we're a few years behind them. So, you know, remember, this is back before, you know, Facebook and Twitter and, you know, the immediacy of or accessibility of information.
Right.
So, you know, you'd have to go to shows and you'd have to stand close to these guys, you know, and try and hear and get a sense of what it was, this mystical thing, you know, of jumping in a van and just taking it to the people. You know, I've always said it's kind of like this idea of, like, you know, heading into the hinterlands to search for converts one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the way it is. And it's kind of still the way it is. It's just so much easier to kind of get information.
Right.
But back then it was just kind of going by rumor almost, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's still that desire for bands to get out on the road and see the country and do their thing like they did when you did it and, you know, stay, you know, below the radar of the mainstream. And but like you said, with, you know, technology and social media, that getting the word out is certainly a lot easier.
And by the way, I don't say that like as some boring old fart. I think it's absolutely fantastic, and that's the way it should be. You know, technology has made... for, like, the full fruition of the DIY, you know, ethos and dream.
Yeah,
so, I mean, I think it's great.
It, yeah.
No, don't get me wrong. It's great.
Yeah, no, I think it's in some respects it's even furthered it. I mean, it's allowed,
no question,
you know, bands and artists to, you know, give the finger to the labels and say, look, you know, we have the ability to do, you know, I can get 50,000 fans and put this out on my own and, you know, reap the rewards more than I
no
could
question.
With some, you know,
no
crummy
question.
Label. So, you know. That's great to see that continuing on. And so for those of you just tuning in, we are talking to Bill C., musician and author from Los Angeles. We're talking about his new book, 33 Days, about his life on the road and involvement in the 80s underground scene in L.A. in the late 80s. I should plug your website, too, Bill, 33daysthebook.com. That's 33daysthebook.com. You can read all about his book, and I'm sure there's links to check it out as well. And is it available on Amazon and places like that?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And
both paperback and the ebook and stuff like that. And it's got, you know, links to the videos and, you know, all that junk.
That's great. And that's so there's videos and such bonus material that people can check
yeah,
out as well.
Yeah, like I take you on like a little scene of the LA music scene, you know, on there. And I've got like two book trailers on there, you know. Give you a little introduction of the world, you know, that we came up out of and the scene and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fun stuff to do, you know, make it visual. Because I think there's a lot of set pieces in the book and very, you know, and lends itself to that visual sort of accompaniment.
Uh-huh.
And and it's interesting, this whole thing about, you know, DIY comes back around full circle for me as I put out the book. You know, just if I could, you know, I'm hitting the road here tomorrow, going up to San Francisco if anybody's in those parts. We're doing a thing at Phoenix Books, and playing with Chuck Prophet of Green on Red, and it should be a real fun night.
Mm-hmm.
Night one, kind of close to you guys, not too far away up there in San Francisco. And, you know, I'll play some music, you know, live, you know, not just, I'm not going to be sitting there with a pen, you know, signing books. That's too boring for me. we'll show some videos and play some live music and stuff, and I'll do some reading. It'll be cool.
So with the live music aspect, are you saying, is your band actually back together playing these shows, or is it just you solo acoustic kind of stuff?
No, the Divine Wings guitarist and the guy did the website and stuff, Raj, he's coming with me. So we'll do some Divine Wings stuff and some other fun things. So not the whole band, but you know, just he and I are going up there and doing that.
So what's the, you know, the nutshell story of your band, Divine Weeks? You got your start late 80s. It looked like you kind of soldiered on through the early 90s. I saw there are actually some videos, full produced videos and some great tunes. What was
repertoire? We went on to a label called First Warning after that first record I talked about. And I forget what subsidiary it was, part of some big conglomerate. Blah blah blah,
right.
And you know that record stiffed, and you know, basically Divine Weeks, you know, we went on plenty of tours and fought the good fight, and you know, why did we end? Because you know, we were friends first, and we wanted to stay friends. That's sort of the short answer of it, and we stayed friends, and I think that speaks well.
How many records did you end up putting out?
Is it two full records, and then like about four singles. And on a few compilations.
Mm-hmm. And you were based in L.A., right?
Yeah, Los Angeles. And you know, our peers were, you know, like, as I said, Dream Syndicate and Firehose. This was after Minutemen.
Mm-hmm.
Jane's Addiction came up. They're kind of a part of the book. They're kind of an interesting hovering shadow over the book because they were just sort of making noise as we left on the tour, and everyone was throwing big money at them. And,
they were one of those sort of anomalous bands that managed to straddle the sort of indie scene, but also they tapped into the metal scene a little bit, which was going on in L.A., of course, in the mid-late 80s.
When they came up, it was a fabulous thing because they literally did crystallize the whole scene, brought it all together. You'd see all, you know, the punks, the metalheads, you know, the hipsters. And then, of course, by the time they put out their first record, it was kind of like you know, it wasn't the same, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it was kind of like, what is that? You know, I mean, a lot of people dig what they did later. I'll sound like a snob, but I mean, if you were there when they really first started, it was just completely extraordinary.
Yeah,
and they
literally
scared people to death.
I can imagine. You know, I never had a chance to witness that, but I'm sure, you know, you being part of that scene, I'm sure it was probably fascinating to see that.
Yeah.
So, any interesting tidbits, short stories you'd like to tease people with about your book, and you know, any interesting events on the road during those 33 days that are?
I mean, you know, amidst all these big life, you know, moments I share in this book, coming of age and whatever, there was a lot of humor, and it's kind of like, you know, like on MASH, you know, like in war, you know, you turn to humor, you know, to overcome some of the stuff that seems beguiling and whatever. Mm-hmm. So we turned to a lot of humor, and you know, like we stayed, you know, with our road manager, you know, we stayed with his cousin's house up in Seattle while we were waiting for our Canadian work visas to come through, and they were a couple of yuppies out of Central Casting. You know, they had a dog named Roderick, for God's sake, you know, and you know, and this weekend with them was just sort of comical and kind of like was defining moment for us that just kind of like affirmed all the goals for us. Like, just in other words, don't end up like those people, at any cost, you know. You know, then we got interviewed in, you know, our one and only commercial radio interview up in Canada. Right. We got interviewed by this guy with no pants who was screaming at us. I mean, just wild stuff. You know, we stayed in a brothel in Calgary, a place called the National Hotel, and you know, this guy went crazy and dragged our guitar player off the stage and took him into the back pool hall where these cowboy dirtheads were going to beat him up.
Wow, this is in Canada. I never thought Canada was such a rowdy place. You wouldn't think that would happen there, huh?
You'd think. And then we you had a sort of a showdown with these two old drunk racists also in Canada.
Really?
Which is kind of another crazy moment. So, yeah, just all sorts of, you know, wacky
Who knew
stuff.
Canada, you know, all this time? We thought they're peaceful, quiet neighbor to the north, and they got all these rowdy rebel rousers.
Other than those two things, it was fantastic. They were very good people, actually, but there was a few nut jobs. So
One thing I'm always fascinated in talking with bands, both now and then, but especially in the 80s, was like, you know, what particular parts of the country seem more embracing of indie music than others, and there's always interesting little niches of places, and a lot of them happen to be in the Midwest, but I'm always kind of fascinated. Was there any like particular geographic area of the U.S. where you felt like more welcome, or there was more of a scene or such? Or
well no question, but there's two answers to that, because the first thing out there after you get over sort of like the honeymoon part of it is kind of like, how are we going to eat today? You know, so
right, that's important.
The first thing that you're looking for is, you know, who's the most hospitable? So even if they're not embracing every aspect of, like, your whole ideology,
right,
it's like if they're giving you, you know, that hospitality, it's like, this is our new favorite place. You know, we love these people.
Right.
You know?
That's true.
So like,
yeah,
you know, little, but you're right, like little pockets, like Iowa City. I mean, who would know?
Right.
Like, they were awesome. You know, St. Louis was great. I mean, every band, I'm sure, has their own answers to that. You know, Minneapolis lived up to its name, you know, a great area and just totally embracing and hungry, you know. So, but as I said, every band has their own stories for different reasons, because like I said, you know, finding gas money, you know, and shelter is like sometimes like the most important thing on your itinerary.
Right, right. No, it's interesting. I've gotten to be friends with the band Four Against over the years. I don't know if you ever crossed paths with them, but they kind of got their start in the late 80s, right around the same time as you, and they were from Lincoln, Nebraska, and they, you know, there was a real vibrant punk scene in Lincoln, Nebraska, of all places, and they wrote about
Actually,
it.
Actually, I forgot that. You're right. Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah, you know, who'd have thought, you know, and this band Four Against, who were playing kind of post-punkish New Order type stuff in the Midwest when everyone else was, you know, drinking Budweiser and wearing acid wash and looking to kick ass and, you know, play Bon Jovi. And here are these guys.
Yeah.
You know.
and yet, really, if you think about it, it makes sense. It's like, I mean, it's just, if you shrink it down to just this whole, you know, like the little playground mentality of how you sort of problem solve life, it all exists kind of in this little pocket. And like everything that you know, like for us, like I grew up in Los Angeles with 1,000 different things to do and whatever, but the people I gravitated towards were the people who, you know, wanted something a little different. I'm a little tired of, you know, the MTV fed, you know, mainstream, whatever. And you gravitate to, you know, a little pocket of people. And it's just the same in just a smaller dose in your Lincoln, Nebraska's or your Raleigh, North Carolina's or whatever.
Yeah. I know. That's true. And it's probably still true today, you know, in a different degree. But well, we're talking, for those of you just tuning in, it is KSU Santa Clara. We're talking with musician and author Bill C. of the band Divine Weeks. He's just released a new book called 33 Days about life on the road as an 80s underground band. A fascinating read. It's available through his website, 33daysthebook.com. I invite everyone to check it out. I was going to ask you, Bill, is this your first book, or have you written other things before?
First book, yeah.
First book, and pretty exciting. Are you, now that you've gotten all this out of your system, are there other things in the works, sequels, other books and ideas that you might be putting out?
Tough call on the books, you know, because, you know, as I've sort of learned on the fly promoting this, you know, I've had a lot of fun and gotten some opportunities, like Pop Matters gave me a column to write now through the book. That's kind of cool. And, you know, somebody asked me if I wanted to start like a website to help, you know, DIY bands. That's in the works. And, you know, it's like, so I don't know. I mean, like, I have a whole bunch of stories, you know, roaming around in my brain, but it's kind of fun to, you know, try and find these other little avenues to, in a not so obnoxious way, help promote the book instead of just buy my book.
Right.
It's kind of like, let me talk about kind of like the environment surrounding, you know, the time of the book or whatever, and let me sort of try and help a little bit, you know, pay back a little bit of you know, some of the bands that helped me, and in sort of a more indirect way, and it's not so obnoxiously all promo. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And you know, again, when we talked about this earlier, just the aspect of how different it was at that time compared to now, as far as, you know, vehicles and avenues for promotion and how you, you know, promote yourself. I mean, yeah, people still get out and get in a van and go out on the road, but as far as, you know, promotion, I'm sure it was a lot harder.
Well, it's
no internet, no.
Earlier, there's a lot more accessibility to information, which makes it much easier. But again, the roadways are a lot more crowded now than they were then, and you see a lot of promoters try and they're snatching up a lot of bands in bulk, and which is fine if you can hook in with them. But for the bands that are truly doing it by themselves, it's much harder to get a tour booked. You can talk to bands out there who are doing it at the most baseline level, and it's really hard to get together, date after date, because the hardest thing touring on your own is having off days. Because as Mike Watt once said, you know, if you ain't playing, you're paying. You know, like, you don't want off days. You're just paying out money.
Right.
So what you want to do, 30 days and 30 nights, it sounds hard, but believe me, that's the only way to do it, or you just go broke out there.
Wow.
And so it's like, it's much harder to string together consecutive nights when you're booking on your own, whereas back in the day, I mean, it was literally a little bit more like, you know, this not really like a secret society. I mean, a lot of people wanted to do it, and they were doing it, but not like now where it's, I mean, literally everyone is trying to go out and do it, which, again, as I said earlier, that's great. But there's a lot of interesting, unique challenges now because the roadways are so, you know, crowded out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you sharing the stage with other notable bands of that time, or was it just kind of different shows on different nights?
Well, you know, the thing that goes on now was going on back then, and you know, we learned it from everyone, you know, notable that I mentioned before at the time, which is, you know, you try and piggyback. You know, you're like, hey, you come to my town, you open for us, I'll help you out, and, you know, let me do the same for you when I come to your town. You know, and that's still going on today. And, you know, like I said, it was that we played with the Flaming Lips, as I said, and Dharma Bums.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a band from San Francisco called Fang. They're kind of a punk band.
Mm-hmm.
They helped us out a little bit. We helped them. And, you know, stuff like that. Just pay it forward, as they say.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And we should also, you mentioned you were coming up here. We should probably plug your Bay Area appearance. You're going to be here tomorrow. Is that right?
Tomorrow night, 6:30, Phoenix Books. And as I said, we're also Chuck Prophet of Green and Red will also be on the bill there. Just a little place. And as I said, we'll be playing some videos. I'll be reading some excerpts and then also playing some live music.
And this is at Phoenix Books? Where is that exactly?
Help me here. Noe Valley, is that?
Okay, in San Francisco. Okay.
In San Francisco,
I was looking for a city. I figured it was
right.
A bookstore, but I wasn't sure what city.
Sorry.
So it's in Noe Valley, in the heart of San Francisco, Phoenix Books, probably on 24th Street.
That sounds
right. If I know my Noe Valley geography right.
Okay.
And then, so are you going out on the road then doing other shows, or just kind of
just
a West Coast thing?
I'll just give one more plug on Saturday in Seattle. I don't know if there's anybody up there for Seattle. Vermilion's Art Gallery and Bar.
Okay.
And that'll be 6 o'clock, Seattle, Vermilion.
Okay, good deal. And once again, everybody listening, go check out Bill's book. It's available at 33daysthebook.com. 33 Days is the name of it, and I'm looking forward to getting my hands on a copy. And sounds like a great synopsis of what it was like to be in the 80s underground scene from an underground band's perspective. In the late 80s. So, again, thanks, Bill, for talking with us today. Good luck with your shows. And, again, 33daysthebook.com is the website for the book, and I wish you the best.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Jeff. Like I said, I'm a big, big fan. Keep listening to you. And, like I said, I'll see you out there.
Rock, right on. Thanks a lot, Bill. See everyone. It is the 80s Underground on KSCU, your underground sounds. How about a little Guadalcanal diary? It's KSCU, Santa Clara.